Hello, I'm Jeff Watts.
And I'm Paul Goddard.
And welcome to the Agile Pubcast, the show in which Paul and I discuss what Agile is really all about over a pint or two in the pub.
In each episode, we chat about our experiences as two Agile coaches in today's ever-changing world.
So grab yourself a drink in the bar, pull up a chair, and enjoy what people are saying is probably the best Agile pub-related podcast in the world.
Hello, Mr. Watts.
All right, bud.
It's a weird saying, isn't it? All right, bud. I think it's very much I don't know if it's just Cardiff, but I think it's kind of South Walian thing, isn't it? This literally means all right, mate.
Yeah. I'm drinking a Welsh beer from the Tiny Rebel Brewery.
Tiny is based in originally Newport, but I think they've
Newport
that expanded Cardiff as well now.
Yeah.
Apparently very nice. Tiny Rebel, very popular with some of my friends.
Yeah, hold me closer, Tiny Rebel.
I've cracked open another bottle of Copperberg.
Very nice.
Strawberry and lime. It's very again. It's just it's like fizzy Ribena, basically.
Hmm.
Yeah, so how's things with you? What are you up to?
What am I up to? Doing quite a bit of product stuff at the moment, actually.
Yeah. Product heavy.
More product leadership, I suppose, is the term that I tend to use these days. There's too much stigma around at the moment about product owners versus product managers and stuff like that, which saddens me, but... There you go. Because for me, anyone in the product space is going to be providing some form of leadership. I'm not as dogmatic about it as people like Marty Kagan. I don't find that helps, really.
What's he said? Yeah, I'm a bit out of touch. What's he said?
Well, he's got another book out, so he's trying to be controversial. I think, well, he's just generally, he likes to be controversial. And it reminds me a lot of... some of the old guard of Agile thought leaders, really. They had some good messages to begin with. So Marty had a couple of books that are still, you know, still to this day, almost required reading for anyone in the world of product.
Right.
Inspired is often something that every product person should read. And I think it's still great. But this book reminds me of when Ken Schwaber brought out... Scrum for the Enterprise, or whatever that grey book was, that was a complete flop.
Oh, yeah, it kind of got panned, didn't it? Yeah, yeah.
And it was, it just sort of showed the extent or the lack of extent. But he's promoting this is how you should organize or transform your organization to be a more product. Well, he uses the term product ops, product operating model. To be fair, he says that's different to product ops, but anyway, product operating model. He's in it. He's been panning Scrum for years,
right?
But recently he was panning product owners, product managers, business analysts. Basically, any organization that has any of those roles is terrible.
Really?
The reckoning is coming for all these organizations that have overhired during the pandemic. These inefficient, ineffective roles. Lumping all agile coaches, product owners, you know, feature teams, all of that is lumping into the really bad, really bad.
Really? But what's he saying? What's the alternative then? What's he suggesting is what should be there?
Well, he wants a product leader. He doesn't like the idea of feature teams. When he talks about the transformation, you listen to it, you think, well, that is how every other person has said that things like that should happen. So what's new? You know, start some pilot teams, find out what works, and then replicate it. There's nothing new there. But what worries me the most is he is so idolized, like people who still idolize Jeff Sutherland, regardless of what nut job stuff he comes out with. And it doesn't matter. Like people will just continually follow them. Like social media influencers, no matter what happens, they just listen to them. I just don't think these people actually, I don't think they're careful enough or considerate enough of the impact that their words have. So he's effectively encouraging organizations to lay off what could have meant to hundreds of thousands of people.
Yeah.
Saying that they're all overpaid, they're all ineffective. And anyone anywhere who is thinking, well, maybe we should cut back on people. And so
Yeah.
what Marty Kagan says, we've overhired and we're overpaying, so we should do that. And it doesn't affect him, but it could affect lots and lots of people.
Well, I'm sure it does
It's a
affect him because
frivolous comment.
it does affect him because, as one of our good friends said to us very recently, that is that controversy creates cash. So he will benefit from that level of, given the following he's got, he will in some way, whether it's selling more books, more courses, more consultancy, he will benefit from it. But hundreds of thousands may not and may suffer, but he benefits. Have you ever met him? Have you ever met him in person? No? Do you think he listens to this?
Almost certainly not. No, I don't think he would care less what Jeff Watts thinks. But and nor should he really, I suppose. But it yeah, I guess I was pretty emotional when I listened to it, because I just feel that people should be more careful about how they act and what they say, because other people pay perhaps far too much attention to it.
Yeah, it's interesting, isn't it? So this it reminded me when you mentioned that of something that came up on LinkedIn recently, and there was a lot of, I think, a lot of disappointed people that got rejected from the latest Agile conference. Can't think where it is. Is it Texas? Can't remember. But I you see the fallout on LinkedIn saying it's like the systems, the process is biased, it's not fair, and it's basically people voting for their friends and all this type of stuff. And I think there's an element of influential people, like Marty and like, and you've mentioned Ken and Jeff. The agile kind of voices that have been around for a long time, they are still now, if people, if the average conference attendee will book that conference based on those headliners, that the people that are going to be there, that might even be saying things that they disagree with, but they'll still pay money to see them being said, if that makes sense. So it's that they are, to an extent, they're bums on seats for the community. And one of our former colleagues at BT, Nicola, once said, "I'd pay money to watch Mike Cohn read a menu." So sometimes it doesn't have to even be what they're saying, but they just want to see see the icon and see them in the flesh, and they'll you suffer from that firsthand when you were competing with Mike at the same time slot at the Agile conference last year, wasn't it? Or the
This
year
is
before.
true.
But there's an element. But that said, and something that Tricia said to me, Tricia Broderick said to me when we were in Amsterdam at the last conference. She said, "You have to still remember that we are, a lot of us are standing on the shoulders of giants, that we wouldn't be doing this if it wasn't for those initial voices that were prepared." And like Ken openly was prepared to say things that needed to be said and to be controversial. And he said that things wouldn't have happened if he wasn't being such an ass about it, if he wasn't being so difficult with it. So there is an
But
element
we'll
of,
never know, will we?
well, we'll
We'll
never
never
know, no.
know.
But that,
And
yeah.
that's a justification for being an ass, isn't it?
True in many respects. But yeah, you'll never know. Would it have had the same amount of traction by just being, would it have stayed around as long? Would it have attracted other agitators in that space. You know, the other people that wanted to make a change, other people that wanted to do things differently. I'm not justifying it, by the way. I'm just saying it's interesting that are those voices always going to be there? Are those controversies always going to be there? Because everyone loves controversy. Everyone loves someone who stand up in a huge conference hall and argue with the speaker, whilst it's uncomfortable to watch sometimes.
Yeah, I guess. You know, I was speaking to some people about it, and they're saying it's just a symptom of what they're only giving the people what they want, right? If people didn't react to it and didn't listen to it, then they wouldn't do it. But I just think it's a dereliction of duty in many regards. I get the whole say what needs to be said, even if it's going to be unpopular, but not, you know, isn't it coincidental that he's saying this unpopular, controversial stuff when he's got a book out to sell? That kind of irks me a bit. It makes me not want to buy the book, but I'm sure it'll make a lot of people want to buy the book.
Yeah. Is he quite open to being challenged on it, or did he kind of profess this from a distance and then keeps out of the way?
I've never really seen anyone challenge him. I've only ever seen acolytes.
Right.
I think he's so revered in the world of product that I don't think anyone would dare publicly challenge him.
Really? Okay.
That's just my interpretation, maybe because I haven't seen it.
Mm.
But I did read... do you remember John Cutler?
Yep.
John?
Yeah, I know. Cuttlefish.
Yeah. He's done a bit of a... what would you call it? Debrief, maybe? Okay. On a podcast episode where he was talking about this kind of stuff.
Yeah.
Where he's picked out quotes and said that this is my interpretation of this. And he's disagreeing with some things that he said and saying that I don't think this is necessarily very helpful, and I worry about what people who don't have time or don't have the experience to look at the nuance of what he's saying, what they might do as a result. So yeah, and John's a well-respected name in the world of product as well. So that's an example of some people respectfully offering an alternative perspective. So that's good. But yeah, it's an interesting world. We were always coming at it from the IT side, weren't we? And there was always that phrase, the business. And despite being an organization that had many, many products, external and internal, we were nowhere near product-led.
No.
And that's still quite the case in a lot of companies now. You still don't see... And this is where I think he has got a point, Marty Kagan, saying a lot of people who've got the title product owner, product manager, are not... Now, I've worked with somebody who was product owner for login, you know, and they are trying to do that role, but login isn't a product.
No.
So that it is used very much out of context.
Mm.
But I also think he's got this idealized view of the world where anyone who's not doing their best, that's still not good enough.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So in some way, it probably offends with your kind of human values, not only just your professional work morals, but also probably at a more fundamental level. It's downplaying what a lot of people are trying to do the best job that they possibly can. Maybe not in the right environment, but that's not necessarily there. I think you're right. I think it's always been a... There's a lot of very clever, very knowledgeable people that have risen out of the IT kind of their own environment to learn the product kind of from the ground up, to meet customers, and to actually, they've gained a lot of respect, I think, that way, from not just from their customers, but from their teams, that they've been part of the fabric of the product ever since it was created. And I can think of a couple of good examples like that, where they just know, just from the amount of time and experience that they've picked up, they just know the product inside and out, all its flaws, all its benefits. And they meet customers, and they, yeah, they are, in some respects, they do. The flip side to that is they become too crucial. You know, if you're not willing to dilute, and dilute's the wrong word, but if not willing to share the product responsibility and to increase accountability across a group of people, then you are in itself becoming the problem, I think. Because all the decisions then rest on you, and you create this kind of power dynamic where teams won't do anything unless that person says so. Is that what we really want? You know, if we're not trying to increase a sense of accountability within teams, and shouldn't we be trying to increase levels of passion in the product rather than trying to remove people from it altogether?
Yeah, I get the impression that he doesn't agree with that. He seems to be a lot more in favor, even more than he used to be, for what we would call the expert archetype, that single
really
person who makes all the decisions. I mean, he does talk about triads and, you know, having an engineering lead and so on, but and a user experience. But he seems to have this idea now of this new role above that, which is the all-powerful, all-seeing God. And certainly not an idea of, you know, self-managing, empowered development team. That doesn't seem to fit with his worldview at all, which I find strange. I can imagine that being something that he believed in, let's say. So he used to talk about the best and the rest, and he gets to work with the best, and he sees the best in Silicon Valley and so on. So in his world, those words, the rest, where they don't, you know, they don't have those amazing product people, so they have to let a team figure it out. I can imagine that.
Yeah.
But no, he seems to be, no, even if you've got shit up developers, no, that those they shouldn't have that autonomy, that authority, that.
So does he kind of still profess to subscribe to an agile way of working, or is he kind of opposed to that view of the world as well?
I don't think he is against the philosophy, but he's certainly found an animosity for agile and agile coaches. And so he's very much of, I did a session a while ago with Roman on the role of the product coach.
Yeah.
And we took different stances, and Roman's very much of the view that a product coach needs to have product knowledge.
Yeah.
So for me, that person's a mentor. Whereas I was of the view that you don't need to know the stuff. You can coach people in their area of expertise without having that expertise yourself.
Yeah.
There's no right or wrong.
Yeah.
Marty Kagan is very much of the view that agile coaches are a waste of time and money. And product coaches, you need to have been there and done that, and you need to have built your own products and before you can coach anyone. Just said, it's not right or wrong.
Yeah.
But it's a very strong view.
Yeah.
Which I think lends itself to a very different model of leadership.
Yeah. And he's obviously got, like you say, a following, and I imagine a list of clients, companies that will subscribe to his philosophy or sign up to his advice.
Mm-hmm.
Right or wrong reasons.
But they'll also misinterpret it. This is the thing. They'll also misinterpret what he's saying. He's very forthright. So there wasn't really a huge amount of nuance. He didn't really use the word "it depends." And so when the danger with that, so the upside of that is people, okay, there's some solid belief here. He's really passionate about it. He's got some solid beliefs that I can understand and I can follow. And it's given me some clear guidance.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so there's an upside there. It may well be false. And equally, everybody who listens to that, there's a potential for everybody to take something slightly different from it because they're listening to it through their own lenses. And so if they assume they've heard him correctly, and they assume he's correct and they follow him, but they're acting on through their own lens, then they're not really going to be thinking about it depends or the nuances. They're just going to be acting almost mindlessly.
Yeah.
But in the false belief that they're following someone who knows exactly what the right answer is. That's what worries me the most.
Yeah. Yeah. And arguably there's no comeback for him if things do go wrong. It's he can't exactly blame a book you read or a YouTube video that you saw or a podcast you listened to.
No.
So yeah, with as Uncle Ben once said, with great power comes great responsibility.
Yeah. Yeah, anyway. So but no, it is nice to work with people who are, you know, these product people have a great opportunity. They have the opportunity to shape people's behaviors and experiences and, you know, make their lives at work or at home better with what they're building. It's a great thing. It's a tough role, and something that it's nice to be able to help people get better at, because a lot of the people in those roles struggle personally to deal with overwhelm, the amount of decisions that they need to make with incomplete information is quite draining. So it amazes me that he's encouraging greater concentration of power and responsibility. Whereas my message is, you can't do all this on your own. You need help. You need to delegate. You need to, you know, empower.
Yeah. And this is the thing. I talk about this a lot in the product owner training that I do, but and I use myself as a good example of this. And I go through the answers to your traits assessment from the coach's casebook about my own and that self-analysis of my own personality. And I suffer massively from people pleasing, as I imagine a lot of people listening do. And it's kind of there, you know, whilst I appreciate as a product owner that people pleasing can be a weakness, because I know personally that I find it harder to take a decision without people's buy-in, because I want people to be happy with the outcome and to be part of it. And whilst I know that that's an essential part of the role, of a product owner's role or of a product manager's role, product leader's role, but I think there are strengths to being a people pleaser, that I want to build relationships. I want to gather people's opinions and people's perspectives on what the product, what's working for them, and there'll be times when I need and I want buy-in from a collective decision about direction and strategy, whatever that might be. And it's kind of like, yeah, that's almost downplaying. So if you're a people pleaser, you can never be a product owner. That's what I'm kind of hearing now from that advice, is that, you know, I've got part of my personality is not right for that role.
Funnily enough, this morning I've just written a blog post about people pleasing.
Okay.
And I talk about a product owner in that blog post. So I can't really disagree with anything that you've said there. There's a lot of positives to be taken from someone who wants to please their users, who wants to please their customers, who wants to please their bosses and their shareholders. There's a lot there, but equally, you can't please everyone.
No.
So it's a fool's errand if you want to, you know, indulge that side of your personality. So it's not something you should or could get rid of, and it's not something that you should or could indulge completely. But it's definitely part of it. And being constantly aware of, why am I making this decision? Is it because I'm worried about how people will react? Or is it because I think it's the right thing for the product? And am I doing it because I want to do it? Or am I doing it because I feel I should do it? And just constantly asking themselves that question, which again is draining, it's tiring. To constantly second guess yourself and reflect and analyze on what you're doing. But it's so easy for cognitive biases to slip into the role of product.
Yeah, very true. Very true.
I feel like we just, this is, I know that's what these episodes are all about. They're just wandering and.
I feel like you're ranting.
Not ranting, but I feel like I should almost sum up something or give people a, you know, almost like a concrete takeaway or something.
So what advice would you give people? Well, firstly, are we adding fuel to the fire here? Are we going to link to this? Assume it's a podcast or something you heard, was it?
Well, that's what I heard. But yeah, I'm sure there are lots of them out there, and
yeah.
I'm sure there are reviews and things. If you want to find it, it's not hard to find.
Right.
But
so would you encourage people to listen to it? Would you encourage people to stay away from it? What would you be saying to people now?
Well, I think anyone that's listening to this podcast is worldly wise enough to be able to take information at face value and make their own judgment on it. They're not going to blindly follow anyone. They certainly wouldn't blindly follow us, I hope.
Yeah.
So you know, we say far too often, well, certainly often enough, that you should always, all models are wrong.
Mm-hmm.
They might have some use, and think about it, and it depends, and all that kind of stuff. So our listeners, I would say, I've got no fear in them listening to that podcast.
Mm.
But maybe some people who are a little more gullible, or a little less self-confident, or a little more insecure, I would be cautious and say, go into this and have a little pot of salt next to you.
Mm.
You can take a pinch every couple of minutes.
Mm. Yeah. I think that's a good...
And if you hear it, and if you hear people talking about, you know, product owners are terrible and feature teams are terrible. Well, I'm a product owner and I'm on a feature team. Don't take it to heart, which is easy for me to say because they're probably worried about their boss listening to it and taking it to heart, or some leadership somewhere in their organization thing. Well, let's get rid of feature teams and let's get rid of product owners. That worries me, but don't let it worry you too much.
Yeah, true. Yeah. Don't really know what more to add to that.
Yeah, I suppose one thing that I think I would agree with, but not to the extent that he put it forward, is that no matter what position you're in, no matter what role you're in, no matter what your organization is like and the culture is like, you can always do something to expand your skills in product. Mm-hmm. Even if you're not being given money for training or anything, you can always enhance yourself. Look at the skills you need and just do something. And sometimes your organization will notice it and they'll say, oh, okay, that's good. And we kind of did that with Scrum Master roles and things. But he goes a little bit too far and kind of encourages people to put their jobs at risk, maybe. So, take action to make yourself more comfortable, more skilled, more confident, more valuable, but also be humble about that and don't be as arrogant as he is and saying that there is one right way of doing things and it's his way.
Mm. I think humility is a really underrated skill. And maybe I'm biased because I'd like to say that I'm a humble person. And I was on doing a training course a couple of weeks back, and there was a guy on there, I won't name him because obviously he's not, let's call him Ian. He wasn't called Ian. Right. But it's the name we use all the time. So Ian's on this training course, but and Ian was probably one of the best examples of a Scrum Master in the room. Okay. So it was a Scrum Master training class, but he'd never been a Scrum Master before. And he'd never been on a Scrum team. He'd never done Scrum. He'd done a bit of reading. He was literally on a career change, and he used to be a photographer.
Okay. Right?
He used to be a photographer at Disney World in Florida.
Mm.
And what he had in spades was the ability to interact with people, and he was willing to learn. Those were probably, I'd say, his two major skills. And I think he was, he was a shining example of a, and it wouldn't, it's not just a Scrum Master thing, it's a trait, it's a human trait. But if you're in a complex kind of people focused environment, then those are great skills to have anyway. And I think it's really, they're sometimes really undervalued and under rewarded, the ability to say, I may be wrong and I'm willing to learn here. But sensitive, and even I even that there's on the surface, a lot of the agile celebrities, let's call them, in the, or the, the kind of the authors and the conference headliners, it's probably not in their interests to appear humble. It's not in their financial interest to appear humble, because humility probably doesn't sell books or sell high, extortionately high consultancy rates. But saying that, I might be wrong here, but you should try this, it's not going to give you a, get you great a great engagement or a great amount of work at Silicon, massive companies in Silicon Valley, I imagine. So,
True. Maybe that's where we're going wrong. But
but
if
you to
that's
be,
right, I don't want to be right.
but Jeff, maybe it's my age, but I'm becoming a lot more comfortable now with not being that, that person, and being able to say, you know what, the what you're talking to me about now is really tough, and and I don't think I've ever faced anything quite like that before, but I'm happy to try and work through it with you, and try and perhaps look at some other examples and try and see what we can extract from those. And so yeah, I think it's, I used to really struggle with that at BT back in the early days, because there was an expectation, and big companies probably expect the expert. I think maybe it's a big company thing, that it's like kind of hierarchy, and kind of where there's a greater divide between pay, salary, at the top to the bottom of the organization, that there's an expectation that people paid more must have the answers. So he's, I dare say that Marty is probably appealing to his target audience is the top of an organization,
True.
and he's not aiming it at those people who are on teams, but he, like I say, he probably doesn't realize the fallout of those kind of that kind of advice or that kind of ethos.
And maybe that's the message that those people want to hear. They want the license to be able to lay off people,
Gives them
cut their costs.
an excuse.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I think a lot of companies are looking for a justifiable reason to cut costs,
Interesting.
unfortunately. It's a bit of a downer, isn't it?
Well, yeah. But I think the good, I still believe good will win. I'm not saying Marty's evil. I'm just saying that I think the good guys always win in the end. So whoever the good guys are, they'll win in the end. But every villain is the hero of their story, aren't they?
Yes, that's true. That's true. Very good.
Cool.
Brilliant.
All right. Awesome.
Well,
Well, I didn't expect that, but there we go.
I'll be sure to avoid that podcast wherever it is. But thanks for enlightening me.
All right. Cheers, everybody.
Cheers, Jeff. All the best. Ta-da.